These guys are our partners, Peter said, hurrying us along the shore. They own the ships that Andrew and I work on. We can't go spread the good news unless they are in on it, too. We came to another small village, and Peter pointed out two brothers who were fitting a new oarlock into the gunwale of a fishing boat. One was lean and angular, with jet-black hair and a beard trimmed into wicked points. James. The other was older, bigger, softer, with big shoulders and chest, but small hands and thin wrists, a fringe of brown hair shot with gray around a sunburned, bald pate. John. Just a suggestion, Peter said to Joshua. Don't say the Fisher of Men thing. It's going to be dark soon. You won't have time for the explanation if we want to make it home in time for supper. Yeah, I said. Just tell them about the miracles, the kingdom, a little about your Holy Ghost thing, but stay easy on that until they agree to join up. I still don't get the Holy Ghost thing, said Peter. It's okay, we'll go over it tomorrow, I said. As we moved down the shore toward the brothers, there was a rustling in some nearby bushes, and three piles of rags moved into our path. Have mercy on us, Rabbi, said one of the piles. Lepers. I need to say something right here. Joshua taught me about the power of love and all that stuff, and I know that the divine spark in them is the same one that is in me, so I should have not let the presence of lepers bother me. I know that announcing them unclean under the law was as unjust as the Brahmins shunning the untouchables. I know that even now. Having watched enough television, you probably wouldn't even refer to them as lepers so as to spare their feelings. You probably call them parts dropping off challenged or something. I know all that. But that said, no matter how many healings I saw, lepers always gave me what we Hebrews call the willies. I never got over it. What is it you want? Joshua asked them. Help ease our suffering, said a female-sounding pile. I'll be over there looking at the water, Josh, I said. He'll probably need some help, Peter said. Come to me, Joshua said to the lepers. They oozed on over. Joshua put his hand on the lepers and spoke to them very quietly. After a few minutes had passed, while Peter and I had seriously studied a frog that we noticed on the shore, I heard Joshua say, Now go and tell the priests that you are no longer unclean and should be allowed in the temple, and tell them who sent you. The lepers threw off their rags and praised Joshua as they backed away. They looked like perfectly normal people who just happened to be all wrapped up in tattered rags. By the time Peter and I got back to Joshua, James and John were already at his side. I have touched those who they said were unclean, Joshua said to the brothers. By Mosaic law, Joshua would be unclean as well. James stepped forward and grabbed Joshua's forearm in the style of the Romans. One of those men used to be our brother. Come with us, I said, and we will make you oarlock makers of men. What? Said Joshua. That's what they were doing when we came up, making an oarlock. Now you see how stupid that sounds? It's not the same. And thus did we become nine. Philip and Nathanael returned with enough money from the sale of the camels to feed the disciples and all of Peter's family as well. So Peter's screeching mother-in-law, who was named Esther, allowed us to stay, providing Bartholomew and the dog slept outside. Capernaum became our base of operations, and from there we would take 1 or 2 day trips, swinging through Galilee as Joshua preached and performed healings. The news of the coming of the kingdom spread through Galilee, and after only a few months, crowds began to gather to hear Joshua speak. We tried always to be back in Capernaum on the Sabbath so that Joshua could teach at the synagogue. It was that habit that first attracted the wrong sort of attention. A Roman soldier stopped Joshua as he was making the short walk to the synagogue on Sabbath morning. No Jew was permitted to make a journey of more than 1,000 steps from sundown Friday until sundown Saturday. All at once, that is. One way. You didn't have to add up your steps all day and just stop when you got to 1,000. There would have been Jews standing all over the place waiting for Saturday sundown if that were the case. It would have been awkward. Suddenly, I'm thankful that the Pharisees never thought of that. The Roman was no mere legionnaire, but a centurion, with the full-crested helmet and eagle on his breastplate of a legion commander. He led a tall, white horse that looked as if it had been bred for combat. He was old for a soldier, perhaps 60, and his hair was completely white when he removed his helmet. But he looked strong, and the wasp-waisted, short sword at his waist looked dangerous. I didn't recognize him until he spoke to Joshua in perfect, unaccented Aramaic. "Joshua of Nazareth," the Roman said, "do you remember me?" "Justice," Joshua said, "from Sepphoris." "Gaius Justus Gallicus," said the soldier, "and I'm at Tiberias now, and no longer an under-commander. The 6th Legion is mine. I need your help, Joshua Bar Joseph of Nazareth." "What can I do for you?" Joshua looked around. All of the disciples except Bartholomew and me had managed to sneak away when the Roman walked up. "I saw you make a dead man walk and talk. I've heard of things you've done all over Galilee, the healings, the miracles. I have a servant who is sick, tortured with palsy. He can barely breathe, and I can't watch him suffer. I don't ask that you break your Sabbath by coming to Tiberias, but I believe you can heal him even from here." Justus dropped to his knee and kneeled in front of Joshua, something I never saw any Roman do to any Jew before or since. "This man is my friend," he said. Joshua touched the Roman's temple, and I watched the fear drain out of the soldier's face as I had so many others. "You believe it to be, so be it," said Joshua. "It's done. Stand up, Gaius Justus Gallicus." The soldier smiled, then stood and looked Joshua in the eye. "I would have crucified your father to root out the killer of that soldier." "I know," said Joshua. "Thank you," Justus said. The centurion put on his helmet and climbed on his horse, then looked at me for the first time. "What happened to that pretty little heartbreaker you two were always with?"
"Broke our hearts," I said.
Justus laughed. "Be careful, Joshua of Nazareth," he said. He reined the horse around and rode away. "Go with God," Joshua said. "Good, Josh. That's the way to show the Romans what's going to happen to them come the kingdom."
"Shut up, Biff."
"Oh, so you bluffed him? He's going to get home and his friend will still be messed up?"
"Remember what I told you at the gates of Gaspar's monastery, Biff? That if someone knocked, I'd let them in?"
"Ack! Parables. I hate parables."